G'day folks, this is The Stace. My special guest today as part of Mental Health Week is SANE Australia Ambassador Mark Eustace. Mark was a former Essendon AFL player whose playing career was cut short by suffering from a bipolar disorder and depression. Let's meet Mark Eustace. I've got on the line Mark Eustace. G'day Mark, how you doing?
Hey Mike, how you going mate?
Good. Hey, what's this you accuse me of? You think I'm a Western Bulldogs fan?
Yeah, I thought you were a Western Bulldogs fan. They had your website up before and there's a picture of the logo of Western Bulldogs. So I don't know what's happened there. It might have just been your putting it up there that they've won the premiership.
Yeah, we did a segment on the grand final, so I guess they get credit for it reluctantly, but they got credit for it.
I just put two and two together and got it wrong.
Oh, mate, it happens to all of us. Where does the Mark Eustace story start? Strathmore, I believe, Melbourne suburb, Brighton Essendon territory.
Yeah, mate, I lived in Essendon, and I played my first club, I suppose, was Strathmore Footy Club, which was the Essendon District Football League. Yeah, so that's where I sort of started, playing my footy. When I was 15, I got... not drafted because I didn't have the draft in those days. I got recruited to Essendon when I was playing as under 15 to play in the under 19s, which they had at the time. So I sort of was, 1 week I was playing against 15-year-old boys and the next week I was playing against 19-year-old men. It was a pretty big step. I did okay. Everything went well. And the next year I got into the Essendon Reserve. And when I was 17, next year after, I played my first AFL, VFL game in those days.
Excellent. So you were young even for those days, mate.
Yeah, I was. Yeah, absolutely. As I said, I was 15 when I was, when I sort of got to the club. So, playing my first game at 17, I was pretty young and sort of was, mixed around a lot of famous names and that at Essendon and, it was really, it was great. It's fantastic.
It was a great era at Essendon in those days.
Yeah, when I had Barry Davis, who was 1980. He got him in his first game. Then 81, obviously, Kevin Sheedy come to the club. He changed the whole mentality of the club, as far as training goes and, mentality and all that sort of thing. He brought in new drills, ideas and, concentrated a lot on, skills. Like, he went as far as make sure that every player had his own football, to carry around with him all the time and,
bring
the training and that sort of thing. Sometimes he was a bit over the top, but there was a method in his madness.
Oh, it certainly was, and it was very successful. And of course, we have very fond awareness of Kevin Sheedy because you're speaking to somebody from inside the Giants territory here. So, Kevin Sheedy was the making of the club. Really, he was brilliant.
Exactly,
he was brilliant.
He does so much for footy. He comes up with a lot of ideas, and he does a lot for footy. No doubt about that.
Were your parents interested in footy? What did they do?
Absolutely, yeah. Mad Essendon supporters at the time because my family lived in Essendon and obviously I did too. I played the Essendon under-19s. Actually, I played in the Essendon Little League. I forgot about that.
Kid.
Played in the Essendon under-19s, Essendon Reserves, Essendon Seniors. I lived in Essendon and my dad in 1984 was the mayor of Essendon.
Was he?
Yeah, he was the mayor of Essendon. So.
What sort of business was your old man in, Mark?
Oh, mate, he was in textiles, that sort of thing. He was a sales manager and things like that in the textile industry. That's probably where he was most of his working life. I think he started his first job as a young Ballarat boy, come down to Melbourne as he started his first job on the railways, I think, and, moved his way up and made a career out of it, which was good. Yeah, but they getting back to your question, I made it up for you. I mean, obviously me making an accident. It was icing on my cake, really. They loved me. I'd come to every game I played and whatever.
Of course they would. What was the main position you were playing in those days,
mate? On the bench, really. When I said Trees had some ideas, a lot of those ideas didn't suit me.
Okay.
Very, very good for the club. What happened was, as he gained sort of 81, 82, 83, 84, he started bringing in a lot of players, you know, different players for different positions and that sort of thing. And I sort of kept getting pushed back in the, you know, to the back of the queue a lot. You know, I'd get in the seniors, I'd play okay, and, you know, I'd come off the bench and do my best. And, you know, next week I'd get dropped back to the reserves, and that sort of, you know, just went on for like, you know, about, you know, for a few years, basically. Yeah, but at the same time, I mean, he was sort of bringing in players, like, you know, he brought in, like, you know Alan Izzard and Tony Elshaw and Leon Baker, who was our champion, and, you know, he had other guys, Bradbury, come in, and Frank Donnell, and just a lot of Paul Weston from South Australia and Billy Duckworth from Western Australia, and, you know, I'm sure there's a lot more, I just can't think of them off the top of my head. But, you know, and he brought them in to do certain jobs, you know, in certain positions, and a lot of those guys, yeah, obviously then you had like players like Mark Harvey and Mark Thompson would come through as well at the same time as me, so yeah, that made it harder. Tony Bahadur was another one, but just to explain it probably, well, I was there for sort of 5 or 6 years, I suppose, on the list, and but I played 100 games in the reserves and 29 in the first. So that was, I played a lot of reserves football and a lot of, yeah, not too many first grade games or first grade, yeah. But, and as I said, yeah, with the reference to me, you know, sitting on the bench, I did, you know, I spent a lot of time sitting on the bench and coming on and off and on and off and in and out and in and out. So, yeah, so that sort of leaded me to actually leaving the club, yeah. At the end of 84, yeah.
Yeah, understand. You went on to play 62 games for Richmond, then 46 for Sydney at the end. Yeah. But you were on a bit of a spiral by that stage. You said in your interview, or the notes that I read, that you reckon it started at about 18, your mental health problems. You've suffered from bipolar, is that correct?
Yeah, bipolar disorder, depression.
Is that still affecting
you? Yeah, I reckon it did. Yeah, absolutely, Well, I went through a stage where I just didn't feel well, you know. I think, yeah, I was about 18 or so, a little bit older maybe. I just didn't feel well, and I had like a year, I think it was 1983, something like that, where I was terrible, you know. Yeah, I couldn't train properly, I wasn't fit, I couldn't play properly, I felt, I just felt terrible all the time. I suppose I can just sort of look at it as though like I had a really bad flu, you know? Yeah, when you get aches and pains in your body and all that sort of thing. And anyway, so yeah, 83 was a pretty, you know, it was a disastrous year for me. And, you know, I nearly, you know, they sort of threatened me with this, you know, the sack, basically, if I didn't pull my socks up. So in those days, they tell you to stop feeling sorry for yourself and get on with it and, you know, be a man and...
Yeah, toughen up, and, princess, yeah, all the, that sort of stuff.
Yeah, toughen up, yeah. At the end of the day, I mean, I didn't know what was wrong with me. And, I mean, no one else did either, because there was just wasn't prominent, the mental health thing. It was just, you know, and no one knew what it was and whatever, yeah. So, look, then I ended up, end of 84, I did okay again, and I ended up leaving Rick Essendon. Yeah, it broke my heart. I didn't want to leave, but I just had to leave for opportunity, really. That's the only reason I left, was for more opportunity, which I needed to do. And you can imagine my parents when I come home after, with all the Essendon connections. And I come home from training one night and I said, oh, by the way, I've just left Essendon. You know, the jaws nearly hit the table.
You could have come home and said, look, I've just shot somebody, and they wouldn't have been more surprised.
wouldn't be so shocked.
But, you know, I guess the improvement really is these days, Mark, is that it's now recognised as a physical illness. They talk about mental health, but it's a physical illness, the same as same way as a hamstring tear or something else. Something that's got to be treated.
Exactly, yeah.
Have the medicos given you any idea how it might have started, or is it something you've had from birth?
No idea. Yeah, it's just it's a chemical imbalance. It's not a hereditary in my family or anything like that. Yeah, just have it. It just happened, and I didn't know what it was. I mean, I played my career out, and you know, I went like 25 years before I got diagnosed. So I didn't treat it for all that time. So,
what turned it for you? You said I did recognise that something had to be done. You'd got into the depths of drug abuse and everything by this stage.
Yeah.
And we won't go back over that.
No, it's okay.
I'm not because I think everybody sort of is aware of how bad it can affect you. But what brought you up short and said, hey, this is something I've got to do something about?
Well, what happened, as you said, with the drug abuse and the alcohol abuse, which I basically medicated to take away the depression and all that sort of thing.
You're not Robinson Crusoe there, Mark.
Yeah, exactly. There's a lot of people out there that aren't going too well with the
what
same.
What turned it for you?
Well, what happened was one of my mates I used to play footy with in Sydney, Barry Mitchell.
Barry Mitchell.
He and Greg Williams, obviously, him. They sort of suggested I go see a doctor because I was sort of going off my head, with all the other stuff and living a pretty crappy lifestyle, and they sort of knew what I was doing and that. They took me to a GP who was on a board of a rehabilitation clinic, and he said, I walked in, he said, the first thing he said to me, he said, oh, mate, do you want to go to rehab? And I said, I thought about it for a second. I said, yeah, I do, actually. So that was the first step towards recovery, that was cool.
And how did you feel when somebody told you that finally they've recognised what your problem was?
Yeah, well, the thing is, I went into rehab, and there all of a sudden, you come good sort of thing, because you're getting fed, you're doing some exercise, you're off everything, and you got plenty of therapy and people around you, and nurses and therapists, and you're in the enclosed walls of and then all of a sudden, 28 days later, you're out by yourself again. I had no job, I had no car, I had no license, I had nowhere to live, I had no money, I had no investments, I didn't have a relationship in my life, my friends, I'd burnt my friends, really. I just sort of made a decision. I thought, I had to go and stay at my mum's place, and I thought, what am I going to do? Either I could have gone down the pub and started drinking again, or I could fight it, and I decided to fight it. That was sort of a big factor that I did. I thought, well, I'll fight this. But then what happened, without all the other stuff, it went, I was sort of pretty low for a long time. And the Players Association down here put me onto a psychiatrist. And first time he saw me, he diagnosed me with all these illnesses, bipolar, depression, and put me on medication, put me into a mental health hospital. I was there for 14 weeks. And I was like having electric shock treatment to my head, that sort of thing. So it was 3 times a week I was doing that. So I come out, I was feeling a bit better, but after a while I just went down the same track. But I was determined to fight, and it was a tough road. I didn't work for 8 years because I couldn't. Basically, I was unemployable anyway, and I couldn't work. I couldn't socialise. I couldn't see people. I'll be honest with you, it was terrible.
it's hard to imagine, Mark. I mean, point is, the psychiatrist at that point, you then knew you had a reason for it, didn't you? It was a matter of how you then had to cope with it. So how do you cope with it now? You've got through that. You're obviously in a job now.
What happened was I finally got a job after 8 years. I just worked in Woolworths warehouse stacking pallets, which you just do just to get you back into the workforce and get you into society and get a bit of structure back in your life. I'd work 6 days a week and did shift work and all that sort of thing. I'd never done before, but that was, you got a call before you walk again. So that really helped me. And then, sort of the end of 2014 or something, I obviously Simon Madden, who is a great Essendon player.
Yep, great guy.
Yeah, great guy, yeah, absolutely. I was at his place for about, I just started to socialise again. I'd go to a function maybe for half an hour and go home, and the next one I might go for an hour, that sort of thing, because I couldn't speak to people and couldn't be around people, and he was sort of having a bit of a Christmas party at barbecue with all the past players at his place, and he sort of called me. He said, Wally, that's what the nickname is. Everybody calls me Wally. And Wally,
Wally? Come on.
Yeah, Wally, yeah.
We'll come back to that.
Yeah. Yeah, come back to that. Yeah, right. He said, mate, I don't know how to talk to you. Like, what do I say? I don't know. And he said, look, do you want to catch up after Christmas, February, March or something like that, and we'll have a chat? And, you know, so I caught up with him, and he sort of does a lot of, he does corporate training for a living. He goes out and, you know, to companies and, you know, corporate and does that sort of thing. He does talks, does that, and mm-hmm. all that. And in the, I think in that June, I don't know if you know, obviously might know the show Open Mic.
Yes.
I was on that last June, and I got a really good response. It was a really good show, and I started to get a. Yeah, we got a couple of inquiries. I got a couple of inquiries about doing some talks about it all. And then Simon and I, we did a couple. He like interviewed me and that, so it went okay. Anyway, so cut a long story short. Time went by, and then this February just gone. I thought I decided to bite the bullet, left the job, and start up my own keynote speaking business. So that's okay. What I do for a living. I speak on mental health, addiction, footy.
Yeah, of course.
So I've started that now.
Gee, that's a big jump, Mark, going from a position where you're having trouble even socialising for a half hour to stepping up in front of people and telling your story.
Yeah. By the time I got to that, I was sort of getting better and better. But then the first three or four months was pretty slow. It was tough, you know. But I battled through it. It was okay. And as I said, I'm the ambassador for Sane Australia. So they're doing a great job at the moment with their mental health work, So I'm doing some work for them, which is fantastic. But it was a big jump. I meant the first few talks were a bit hard.
I bet.
It's getting better. Everything. Look, at the end of the day, life's getting better. I mean, I've started off that business, and I've obviously I've got a license now. I've got a car.
Yes.
I'm moving to a new apartment next week. I bought myself an apartment. Got a bloody lady in my life.
Romance.
So. Look, at the minute, I sort of can't really. I'm not complaining. I feel much better, but I still have my down days. But come the first of November, I'll be clean and sober for 10 years. It's been 10 years.
Well done.
We're celebrating with a tea and scones and water.
Lash out. Have a bit of jam on the scones, mate.
I'll really go for broke.
Yeah. Do you need to medicate now, or is this you?
I'll be on meds for the rest of my life.
Yes. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Do you have to increase those, or are you reducing them, or you've just got them at a level that you function?
Yeah, I've got them at a level now where it's right. The things with meds, when you first start off on them, like the doctors might give you ones that don't work on you.
Mm-hmm.
So the psychiatrist, So what happens is if you've all of a sudden gone 2 or 3 months where they've put you on all those meds and they're not doing well they've got to wean you off them to put you on new ones, and they've got to wean you on new ones. Okay. For me, it took about 12 months before I actually found the right sort of cocktail.
Yeah.
And that's another 12 months sort of hell because I was not getting, and the actual meds that I was on, when it weren't doing me any good, I was like, I was in uncontrollable shaking. I couldn't, I was just, that sort of thing, But now we've sort of got the right, the right pills in order, and the right dosage. I'm on a winning formula there, so that's what works for me. So I won't be changing it, anytime soon. So.
Well, you've got a way of managing it. That's brilliant. That is really brilliant. Oh, look, I've got to come back to the Wally question. Where did that come from?
Yeah, you've got to have to. Well, it's not a look. You're gonna be disappointed with this story. Oh. But when I was a young lad at Essendon State School, my mum used to. Dress me up in my pants, obviously, in my jeans or whatever I had on, and she'd pull them right up over my stomach, So I was wearing high pants.
Yeah.
And my sister was at the same school, she's older than me, and that time anyone that wore their pants high, they were called Wally Groovers, so everybody started calling me Wally Groover, and that was when I was about 5 or 6 years of age, and then went from Wally Groover back down to Wally. People called me Walter, people called me Wal, so that's the story, mate.
I think these days it would have been Harry High Pants, wouldn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, Harry High Pants or something like that. But I got stuck with Wally. I'm glad they dropped the Groover. Yeah. Walter sounds a bit more distinguished.
You would appreciate now that clubs, footy clubs, now have people that are able to help in diagnosing and catching this stuff in the early stages. I mean, I'm thinking particularly of somebody like Buddy Franklin last year, who famously dropped out for a couple of months but seems to be back bigger and better than ever.
Yeah, I mean, there must be obviously something wrong, because he pulled out of his final series. It wasn't though he just missed a couple of home and away games.
No.
Exactly.
It was obviously pretty serious. I don't know whether it was an addiction or a mental health problem, I got this question asked to me,
if I had been diagnosed, how would your life have been different? You know, how would football career been different? I just said, it would have been just 100% better. It would have been unbelievable if I was diagnosed when I was 18 and knew what I had and what I was faced, got treated for it, and, you know, and the club was, you know, like, with me and, you know, doing the right things by me, you know, like they do now. I mean, they've got medical staff, they treat all these things, they've got the best treatment, you know, everything, you know. Look, I just would have, my life would have been so much, you know.
Yeah.
So much better. See, I finished playing when I was 28. Basically, I'd like another 2 years to go on my contract when I was up in Sydney, and I just basically couldn't go on, you know. I got the stage, I was, you know, I'd go into the toilets before a game and I couldn't come out, and, you know, after games I'd be crying and, you know, all this sort of stuff. I got to that stage and I ended up just gave it away, because I mentally, you know, I was exhausted. I just couldn't take this anymore. But the thing is, once I thought it was football, it was just so much pressure on me. But, you know, after I finished the footy, it was, you know, good at first and all that, and then, mate, it just all started again. So, you know, that was the thing. So that's when I started to get myself into a bit of strife.
Yeah, well, Sydney Swans were in a bit of a bipolar situation in those days, because 91, 92, 93, they were in the doldrums after the big highs of the Edelston era and moving up South Melbourne. And I remember it really well. And I was at the game in 92 when I think Ron Barassi had started coaching them, and they won their first game in about a year and a half against Melbourne, of all people, at the SCG. And, yeah, I mean, that was pretty bipolar as well, wasn't it?
I know. I mean, they've done a terrific job with it now. I think what they've made the last 11 something final series is 11 or 13, 12 or something like that.
That grew
a remarkable job to turn that club around. Yeah,
well, that was Mike Willisey and the crew, and they got in and turned it into a club.
But yeah.
They vowed there and then they would not be out of the top eight ever again.
Yeah.
And
they just about managed
to maintain that. It's a driving philosophy at the club. But, Mark, given the condition you were in, you were really lucky that you didn't get jail time or anything, really.
Yeah, well, at the end of the day, I was headed for jail or death, basically.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm imagining. That's what was facing me. And that was down to Diesel and Barry Mitchell that picked you up?
Yeah, basically, and Diesel's wife, Mary, who did an enormous amount for me to help me out. So got me good friends back again, and, you know, that sort of stuff. So, you know, it's all good. It's all good at the minute.
Good thing about footy, isn't it, that players tend to stick together, don't they, and help out mates?
Well, they do, yeah. I mean, obviously, when people finish their careers, you know, people go their own ways, interstate, country, you know, different jobs, you know, whatever. But, you know, when you get back together at a reunion or something like that, mate, you just pick up from where you left off, you know, 20 years ago or something. You know, it's sort of all sort of good. Yeah, footy clubs are great in that, for that sort of stuff. But they can be brutal as well.
Well, true. Yeah, I just wonder how much your early days at Essendon had in contributing it to it. A lot of time on the reserve bench. What was the main position you played? I don't know if I asked that earlier, did I?
No, you didn't. I made that Essendon. You did. I sat on the bench.
That's right. That's how we got onto that.
Yeah, that's how we got onto that. I look at Essendon, look, I was half forward, bit of wing, that sort of thing. Then when I got into Richmond, I went more in the midfield, a bit of half back. Then up in Sydney, I did a bit of tagging and that sort of thing. That seemed to be me go. They put me on the best midfielder and that a lot of the times. Then up in Sydney, I played like wing, midfield, played a lot. You know, I went sort of half back and that sort of thing, a bit of running style. So, yeah, I sort of mixed it around a bit as years went on, sort of thing. So, yeah.
Yeah, so you must have had a bit of speed to you, a bit of speed and toughness.
Yeah, I was pretty quick. Yeah, I was pretty quick.
Yeah, those days in reserves must have been pretty soul-destroying.
Well, they were. I mean, the thing, probably one of the hardest things was, like, if you get dropped from the seniors, I mean, they expect you just to dominate in the reserves the next week. Like, if you get dropped back to the reserves and you have a down day, well, that sort of puts you another 2 weeks behind.
Exactly.
It's hard to explain. They say, well, he didn't play this good this week, so if someone drops out or we drop someone, we can't put him in. And if you have two bad ones in a week, which I really did, you sort of keep putting yourself behind the black ball all the time, so behind the eight ball. So the pressure was performing in the seniors because I was petrified of getting dropped all the time, and I couldn't really play my own game, making mistakes and all that sort of thing. Then when I get back to reserves, the pressure was horrendous because I had to be like basically in the
superstar,
top three or four players. Yeah, which I actually did. I performed really well every week, pretty well in the reserves. So I just kept my name up there, for them to look at. Yeah, so it was just pressure all the time, really, for me, it was just pressure to perform all the time, whether it was reserves, seniors, and when you're like that, you can't, and that's why I said I left for opportunity when I played, more senior footy, obviously, at Richmond and Sydney. Yeah, so, then there I sort of really didn't have that, I did have the pressure, but my spot was more safer, so it wasn't as bad.
And how about your relationship with your parents? Are your parents still alive?
My father passed away in 1991.
That would have set you for a loop as well, wouldn't it?
Yeah, well, that didn't help. That was the year I retired as well, so I gave it away. My mother's still alive, but she's not that great at the minute. She's 89,
That's a good innings, Well, you're going to be able to manage it now, though, aren't you?
Yeah, absolutely, Things are looking good. Things are on the up, better than what they were 12 months ago, better than what they were 6 months ago, better than what they were 10 years ago.
That's exactly right. We can't ask for more than that, mate.
Yeah, exactly,
Oh, look, mate, you're an inspiration. You really are.
Good on you, mate. Appreciate it.
Look, I can't say that I completely understand, but I have been in some pretty low spots myself, and I know what that's like.
Yeah.
But there's a difference between being a low spot and actually having a mental health problem, isn't there? It's not just a, pick yourself up.
The best thing to do,
go and talk to somebody.
I get asked a lot, what do I do? What should I do? And I just said, look, I'm not a doctor, but I've been through it, and I'm a living proof that I've been through it all. And I said, what you got to do is you just got to get help. That's the first thing you go and do. You go and talk to your family, you go and talk to your friends, your partner, your work colleagues, whoever it may be. Just go and talk to someone and just get help. Go to your GP, That's what you got to do. Take that first step is the biggest, because there's a lot of people that don't want it. And, your first step is the biggest, but, there's light at the end of the tunnel, and I'm a living example for that.
And there is places like SANE who you can contact.
Exactly.
Presumably.
Yep. We do a wonderful job in the community now. So, and it's Mental Health Week this week.
Yes.
We had World Mental Health Day on Monday. It's been really good. And SANE do a fantastic job, and I'm proud to be an ambassador for that with them. So, it's been really fantastic. And they're helping a lot of people out there. And they'll continue to do that, obviously. So, I'm proud to be a part of all this, which is fantastic.
Exactly. So, our message, yours and mine, I guess, to people that are listening, if you have any doubts or concerns at all, go and have a talk to somebody like SANE or Beyond Blue or a number of other organisations, or just your GP and get started, isn't it? Because if you don't do anything, it'll just get worse.
I sort of say there is no weaknesses in reaching out, only strength in finding support. That's what you got to do.
And alcohol can be just as bad as any of the harder drugs as well. I think there's a lot of people who are sitting on the borderline because of the amount they drink as well.
Absolutely. No doubt. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
That's helping to cover a more serious problem underneath, and that's what you've got to recognise.
Yeah, exactly. The other things just go along with it, so it's just not the depression.
And, you know, you're the light at the end of the tunnel, mate. I mean, yeah, this might seem really hard for a person to tackle, to go and admit it and have a talk about it, but it's the first step to recovery, and there is life after it, isn't there, as you're showing?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah, there is. It takes a bit of hard work, a bit of discipline. It's not going to happen overnight, which is, you know, I'll be truthful with that. There is light at the end of the tunnel, and you can still live a happy life.
Well, it's better than the alternative, Mark.
No, that's right. Yeah, we don't want the alternative, which is, you know what...
It's just hell.
Yeah, that's no good to us. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so don't keep living that way, folks. Get help. So, Mark, mate, it's been a real honour to have a chat with you, and I appreciate it, mate.
That's my pleasure, mate. No, my pleasure, that's right.
Good on you, mate, and thank you very much for sharing your story with us today. Thank you.
Good on you, mate.
Thanks, Mark. See you later.
Thanks,
talk to you again,
too, mate.
I hope.
Bye.
Bye. Well, that's it for this episode of the Stasis Place podcast. My special thanks to Mark Eustace and to Sane Australia for allowing me to bring this inspirational story to you. If any part of Mark's story strikes a chord with you or someone you know, please call Sane Australia on 1800 187 263 or Lifeline on 131114 and do get help. And don't forget, check out my website at www.stasisplace.com.au for all the show notes relating to this episode. You can also follow links in the show notes to subscribe to the podcast through iTunes and a number of other services. I would love to hear any questions you may have about this podcast by leaving a comment on the website or on iTunes. You can also catch me on Twitter at @StaceAlive. Thanks for listening, folks. Bye for now.